So this morning, we're continuing our study in Psalm 139, and we're going to focus on the sanctity of life and God creating us. And then we're going to hear from two of our missionaries who are going to describe how we can apply that truth. What is he calling us to do in the light of what he has created us to be? So focusing in, Psalm 139. Some of you missed my sermon last week for some reason, and I'm just going to set the stage for us in the setting there of focusing on God's powerful presence, and then I'm going to focus in on God's creative power. So let me begin with a story. Now, when pastors tell stories or illustrations, I'd say based on a true story. Because really, this one's based on a true story, intentionally, without all the details. There was a woman from South America who was in the United States illegally, and in her life, she made a decision that ended up with her expecting a child. She felt no hope at all. She had no work. She had no promise of work. She really didn't have a steady place to live. And so she, in her desperation, went to a place called Planned Parenthood, in which she thought maybe there could be some hope, but I suspect she also knew that that would potentially mean an abortion. On the steps of Planned Parenthood, a gracious voice spoke into her ear, a person who said, "There's another way. There is hope." And she responded to that invitation to go to a crisis pregnancy center where, with an ultrasound, she witnessed a little baby in her womb. I read this week, which I was not aware, that the heart beats at 16 days. Now, can't detect that heartbeat except seeing it through ultrasound, begins as a little flutter. 16 days. Amazing, the creativity of God. And so she responded to that invitation, and as they explained what the opportunity and the resources were, her hope was restored, and she decided she would keep that baby and give that baby up for adoption. And she came in every week to pray for her little baby as they gave medical assistance to her, even gave her housing to live in. And there was another family that was praying for the opportunity to adopt a child, and they were just asking the Lord for that opportunity. And then she was praying for the opportunity to give her child to a Christian family. And toward the end of that pregnancy, they chose each other. And we have a ministry in the church called Chosen. And really, it's because God has chosen. But it's also seeing God at work. So this woman felt hopeless. It changed my view of those who come for an abortion. Just kind of, it was a paradigm shift that there's no hope. Really looking for hope. Where's hope to be found? Well, of course, Psalm 139 is focusing on our hope is in the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. Our hope is in the Lord. And as we've read this passage, we started with the knowledge of God, and then we transitioned now to the presence of God. After David is reflecting on the God's knowledge, he asks, "Where can I go? Where can I go from your presence?" And of course, the answer is nowhere, because God's presence is everywhere. Where can we go and not have God's presence with us, sustaining us, loving us, strengthening us, encouraging us? Where can we go from God's presence? And then, so he moves from the question about God's presence to the quantity of God's presence. And I was following the New Horizons NASA trip to the Pluto and the far reaches of our solar system, and you go, and God is there. And that's only the beginning, right, of the greatness of God, how great God is. God is from the farthest distance. He goes from the highest to the Sheol, or the depths of the earth. God is there. God's presence is everywhere. He is, we can never flee from His presence or from His Holy Spirit. Then I turn to focus on the quest of God's presence. And reading in verse 10, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day. And I looked at the nature of God's quest, and I look at His hand shall lead me. One grandchild asked, why does Papa hold Grandma's hand? The other grandchild said, of course, to keep Grandma safe. Well, that's part of it. When grandmas fall, it's not good. But when you hold a child's hand, there's this relationship, right? Isn't it sweet? You grab hold of that hand, and there's a relationship. God holds our hand because He relates to us. It's personal. As we go through, as the psalmist said, the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. And it's His right hand symbolizing His strength, holding our hand. So He walks us and He holds our hand. But I see in that holding of the hand guidance as well, the direction to go. I think of that woman on the steps of Planned Parenthood who didn't have direction, but literally God took hold of her hand and guided her life, guided her direction. We don't always know the direction to take, and sometimes we feel hopeless in our choices, but God's hand is there who holds us and guides us. But there's something also in security, right? It's relationship, it's the idea of guidance, but it's also security. When you have somebody holding your hand, when you slip on the ice, you want somebody to hold on to, right? God is holding on and giving security so we can count on Him to hold us. Then he goes on that God's presence illuminates the darkness, illuminates. Surely the darkness shall cover me. And the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. Darkness is often a place of fear, of insecurity. I remember serving churches in New York City, and when we invited our pastors from New York City to the Adirondacks, they were terrified of the darkness. And I'm thinking, and then I thought of our pastors from the Adirondacks went to New York City, and they were terrified in New York City. I thought, you know, but darkness is terrifying, right? It's that uncertainty. What is in the darkness? And the darkness is not dark to the Lord. God penetrating illumination is not dependent on created light, but He penetrates the darkness and provides His comfort and security. So that was last week's sermon. And in summary, I was trying to focus on how great God is. Because as we talk about the next step, we need to keep our mind, as we look at this troubling world, you remember Jesus lived in a world with tyrants ruling the world who simply had no respect for God, or actually Augustus Tiberius, he claimed to be God. On his coin is Son of God. That's who he claimed to be. And of course he's not. And so we're reminded today, who is God? Who is on the throne? Who rules the universe? And that's why that's so important to set that step. But as we look at the quest of God, I wanted to go to look at the next stage, which is His creative work. And this is absolutely spectacular. It is absolutely phenomenal. The creative work of God. I believe that God is the creator because the Bible says so, but I see his fingerprints on everything. God is the creator. And when you look at the life born in the womb, you cannot help but stand in awe of the creative work of God. Absolutely phenomenal. So the passage then turns to David recognizing that he is created. God created each one of us personally within the mother's womb. God's powerful presence is evident from the very conception. Biologically, when the sperm and egg unite, you have the genetic code of a unique human being. And I, on the notes, I had an interesting quote. People say this is potential life. No, this is life with potential. Completely different. This is life with potential. And when you carry that thought through, you know, we all are life with potential. Your location does not determine your value. Your productivity does not determine your value. You're valuable because you're created by God. And you were created in his image, as Hal mentioned earlier. We're created in the image of God, reflecting his character. So even at that embryonic stage, this is human life with potential. For you created my inmost being. The inmost being, the word inward parts, the Hebrew word for kidneys. And you think about kidneys and for the Hebrew perspective, that was the center of your emotion and your feeling. So God is not only creating a physical being, but he's creating a spiritual being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. This is a picture of a weaver blending together varied colored strand of thread to create the unique beauty of each person. So we're not accidents, right? We're a gift from God. You are a gift from God. Every little one is a gift from God. Prenatal development is a wonderful expression of God's workmanship. He says, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. When we think about the magnificence of God's creation, we should stand in awe of the greatness of God, an appreciation for him, a respect for him. We are created by God. And then verse 15 says, my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret. The frame refers to the bones in a collective sense. By the end of 6 weeks, only 42 days after conception, the delicate skeletal structure is formed. The brain already coordinates the movement of muscles and organs. God is the creator. Verse 16, your eyes saw my unformed substance. Notice the personal pronouns describing this life in the womb. It is not an it. It is a person. And I realize sometimes you don't know the gender. But if you've noticed, some are intentionally replacing he or she with it to discredit or to distract from the personhood of that precious life. The womb is now the most deadly place in America. John Newhouse, in his book, Birthplace of Freedom, writes, if we say a life is without meaning, we are not saying something about that life. We are saying something about ourselves. Meaning is not ours to give or withhold. Meaning is there for us to acknowledge and revere. To say a child is unloved, we are not saying something about the child. We are saying something about our failure to love. So life begins in the womb. That embryo contains all the essential biological material, genetic information required for complete cellular maturation. That is a person from the moment of conception. So as we think about decisions that happened this week in Albany, it didn't change anything, did it, about life? It didn't change anything about who God is and what we're called to do. In fact, I think it gives us opportunity today to focus on what does God call us to do? And we're privileged to have two partners here with us today. We're privileged to have Julie Bickley, and she's going to be introduced by our Faith Missions representative, Don Simmons. Come on up. Don serves on our missions team.
The Apostle John, in his opening chapter of the Gospel of John, explains the incarnation of God in this way. He said, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, and we beheld his glory." I love the way that Eugene Peterson, in his paraphrase of the Gospel called The Message, put it this way, "And God became man and moved into the neighborhood. And we saw him with our own eyes." The ministry of Young Life is one that has a vision that no teenager would be ever left alone without spiritual guidance at their most critical time of life. And that's really what the incarnation is. Unlike so many ministries to teens that try to create programs to bring them in, the ministry of Young Life goes to where they are. Goes to the high school, to the football games, basketball games, track meets or plays. Wherever kids are, you're likely to see a Young Life leader there. I've been amazed. I moved here in 1986 to help build Young Life in this part of the state. And over the last 30 years, we've seen Young Life grow from Shenandoah to Burnt Hills to Saratoga, South Glens Falls, Queensbury, Lake George, Cambridge, Argyle, all the way up to Plattsburgh. But it's not just geography when we talk about every teenager not being left alone and without spiritual guidance. What about those who are disabled, or perhaps incarcerated or addicted, or maybe it's a teen mom? Who's going to go to them? So I'm excited to be part of a ministry that thinks beyond the walls of the church, but thinks, how can we minister to those that really are in need? Last year, a group of us began to think and dream about how can we reach teen moms in this area, that they would not be left alone without spiritual guidance at their most critical time. And so I'd like to introduce Julie Bickley, who's been a good friend for many years. Her and her husband, Lance, have been involved in Young Life probably almost as long as I have. And she's leading up our ministry called Young Lives, which is Young Life's mission to teen moms. So with that, I'll hand it to Julie.
Thank you, Don. Young Lives is focused on teen moms. So in this past year, we have started the process of networking to meet teen moms in Saratoga County, and also to build a team of volunteers to reach out to them. So the way we do that is best explained with 5 C's. The first C is contact work, and that's just the one-on-one meeting girls and spending time with them, building friendship and relationship. And then the second C is club. That's when we have an event for Young Lives. It's a monthly event, and we bring those girls and mentors together to have a meal together, and also games and some fun together, as well. We end with a short talk about who Jesus is and what he's done for us. And then campaigners is another time we get together monthly to kind of go deeper in Bible study and discussion about faith. And then camp is an exciting part of Young Life. It's a time in the summer that we, for Young Lives, it's a week for these girls to go away from the distractions of home and with their children. There's childcare provided, and they're able to have the best week of their lives with their mentors at a Young Life camp. And I do have flyers for, there's an opportunity for anyone who would like to do childcare at that camp. It's an amazing time. It's kind of a small mission trip, short-term, close-by mission trip, about 3 hours away. And if you're interested, I'd love to talk to you about that. And then the fifth C is committee, which is the group of adults in the community that support and enable the ministry to thrive. So currently we have a team of three mentors that have relationships with three moms in the nearby area, and we've had one go to camp this summer, two went to fall weekend camp this fall, and we've started club with them, and we're having a great time. We're also it's messy, as I was telling Don, the relationships can be messy, and just doing life together, working, having discussions about parenting, about relationships, about abortion. We've had that as well. So it can get intense, but it's also very rewarding and exciting to see what God is doing, because no matter what they say in Albany, God is active and he is working for his glory. And he does that one-on-one as we share him and let him love through us. So that's what Young Lives is about. Thankfully, we are not alone in this. We have Alpha Pregnancy Care Center has been a wonderful resource for us in this last year. And so I'm privileged to have Will Babarsi, the new executive director, come behind me. So thank you. And I will be in the foyer if anybody has any questions of ways that you'd like to be involved or know more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie. My name is Will Babarsi, and I'm the new executive director of the Alpha Pregnancy Care Center. I am from Peru, so if you notice a little accent, it is not the microphone, all right? It's just who I am. But I'm very excited to be here. I'm very glad that I was invited to come and speak with you and get to know you guys, get to know this church. We couldn't be doing what we do without churches and congregations like you. So thank you very much. Now, I don't know how often you go into Facebook. I usually don't. But I did in the past week. And in light of the law that was passed in Albany, I saw so much celebration, so much indignation, so much anger. There's so many feelings out there. And in the midst of what was passed, Alpha Pregnancy Care Center takes this opportunity to reaffirm the significance of our mission and the commitment to our efforts and our dependence on God. Over the past year, we've seen over 1,000 clients, 1,000 different women and men that came through our doors without hope, in crisis, not knowing what to do. And to us, those 1,000 people are not just numbers, but they're stories. The stories of men and women, like the story of that South American lady that you shared about. And I would like to share with you one of those stories in a short little video that they'll be queuing up very soon. And after the video, I'll share with you my closing remarks, please.
They just prayed for me, and they just kept praying for me and telling me how good of a blessing or great of a blessing this was, that I was having another baby, and I just wasn't hearing it. I didn't care, I didn't want it. So there was times where I wanted to go and get an abortion and kept going back and forth, but they just kept praying for me.
And it was myself and Miss Paula here, and I asked her, I said, what would help you to not make this decision? And because I kind of knew a little bit about her situation, and I just knew that, again, God has a way of, you know, giving you what to say and when to say and how to say. And I knew it wasn't me saying it, that the Lord was saying to her, in whatever way I can help you, I'm willing to help you.
So if it wasn't for Alpha, I probably would have went and had an abortion. If the center hadn't have been here, the people who were working here hadn't have been here, there would have been no second daughter for me.
So I told her that whatever she needed, that I would help her. And she kept her baby. Miss Paula was here and she shared her testimony, and we didn't give her no pressure, you know, gave her a chance to go home and to think about it. And she decided to keep her baby. She'll be 2 in May.
Think about, like, if I took the route of abortion with her, how my life would be different. I feel like I can't really picture my life without her now that she's here. I can't really see what it would have been like if she wasn't here. Yeah, she wouldn't have had a life if I decided to abort her.
Kiana's story is one of the many stories that we are blessed to witness in the ministry that we're part of. So thank you very much for your partnering with us and allowing God to touch the lives of mothers, fathers, and babies. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, at the end of the service, we also have a table, and we have some baby bottles. You can take one, and I think we're hoping that you can bring it back in a couple of weeks, and you can just put change, checks, whatever you want. And we also have some literature and newsletters. We're always looking for more prayer partners and people that want to volunteer in our offices as well, even as peer counselors, and speak to men and women who are hungry for hope. Thank you very much. God bless you.